Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Ben Witchell, our last interview, I think, up in the cool and rather, well, I'd say cool and trendy, but I just mean cold, East Anglia, Suffolk, Norfolk ways, 1 o'clock on the clock
of England.
Of London. If you go a clock around London, 1 o'clock, a couple of hours, sort of east of London. So, one of the things I wasn't expecting to talk to you about, I was expecting to talk to you about Bacchus, which we did last week. But yeah. we were going through some of your wines that you're making. You've got some great varieties. I don't really know, but they are apparently known in England. So, the first one was Solaris, which I was saying is a science fiction book.
Yeah, probably is, yeah.
and a movie.
Is it?
Yeah. I think it starred, what's that famous actor who's known for coffee and whiskey, and he married a lawyer?
I don't know.
Yeah.
George Clooney,
yeah. That's right. But we're not talking about George Clooney, we're here talking about grape varieties, and Solaris is a grape variety grown in England.
I presume
it's German originally, because everything's...
I think it is German originated, probably at Geisenheim or somewhere like that, I'm not entirely sure, but it's an unusual variety that's very disease resistant. It's classified as Vitis vinifera, but it's potentially got some hybrid traits in there. It's got a bit of Riesling and Pinot Gris in there, and a bit of Muscat as well. But the main thing around Solaris, I mean, it was brought across to England maybe five years ago, and planted mainly in the sort of cooler areas because it's incredibly early ripening. It's very, very disease resistant. It almost requires no spraying for mildew.
So, really?
Yeah, it's incredibly disease resistant, as are a lot of the hybrid varieties.
What's that? What, do you know why?
I don't know why. It's just been bred with disease resistant varieties from some non-vitis vinifera stock that have just got much more disease resistant. They don't have the vitis vinifera kind of taste profile. Mm-hmm. So it's just been bred and found to be incredibly disease resistant. So yeah, you can almost grow Solaris and not spray it at all. It's a very high yielding variety, and as I said, it ripens very early. Last year, 2017, we had a very, very early harvest, and people were ripening Solaris up to 12.5 degrees potential alcohol right at the beginning of September. Mm. So high yielding, and it's also quite an interesting variety. It's yet to really sort of prove itself, I think, but it's a bit like Bacchus. It can be quite aromatically expressive, so it's got a lot of potential for sort of aromatic wines and still wines because of its high sugar content. So yeah, I mean, Solaris is a variety that we actually managed to source from a vineyard in Norfolk this year, a lovely vineyard called Humble Yard, and they've got some interesting varieties. Solaris is one of them.
What are you trying to make out of Solaris?
Solaris, you had it in oak,
didn't you?
We got it in some oak. Now, I'm trying to do the opposite thing that most people would normally do with Solaris. A bit like we were talking about Bacchus, Solaris has got a lot of flavour that's like Riesling. It's probably coming from the skins. But I think, personally, that Solaris can be a little bit over-expressive in terms of its aroma. And it can go down the sort of Bacchus route of sometimes just having some quite unusual aroma characteristics, which can be too muscatty and sometimes a bit too musky. And I wanted to do something a bit different. So we picked it before it got too ripe, although last year was quite ripe. It was about 12 degrees potential alcohol. The acids were nice and low. We did a whole bunch inert gas pressing on it. So we whole bunch pressed it. So we did a gentle pressing just to try and not get too much skin contact. And then we did an oak barrel fermentation, and we left it on its lees, and it's still actually on its lees in barrel now, which we're doing lees stirring, just to try and pick up some different flavours, just to see what we can get out of it, just try and get something a bit more complex, something a little less obviously aromatic. And we're going to use that for a special sparkling wine that we're going to release later in the year.
Okay, well, Solaris is the base for a sparkling wine, but you did say the acidity was a little bit low. So.
Acidity's low. We're going to blend it with another grape variety, just to get that acidity up a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to blend it with some Reichensteiner. But we're not going for a typical kind of sort of champagne style sparkling wine. We're going for something maybe a little bit more approachable. So,
are you going to do bottle fermentation or tank?
We are going to do tank fermentation.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a sort of Charmat style thing. So,
do you have the tank to do that?
We're working with somebody who has got the tanks to do that. So yeah, there's
because you need special high pressure tanks, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to be we've got the setup. And the wine, as you've seen, is currently in barrel. It's also partly in tank. So we're trying to get a lot of lees contact through the aging process that we're doing at the moment, because we want to have a bit of complexity in there. But it's going to be transferred to tank around about the end of February, where it's going to spend 3 months in tank, and then it will be released as an early release sort of sparkling wine. That's what we're intending to do.
Do you think it'll be like a fruity style, like a Prosecco, which is done in tank as well, or? Yeah.
Well, it will have similarities to Prosecco, I think. We don't want it to be a fruit bomb Prosecco, but it's going to be a rosé style wine. So it's going to be Solaris, obviously that's white, but it's going to be blended with a rosé wine that we've already made this last year, 2017, from grape variety Rondo and also Cabernet Cortis. So it's going to have some nice fruity characteristics, but I just want it to have a little bit of underlying complexity as well. I don't want it to be a fruit bomb Prosecco. So we're going to treat it quite gently. We're going to do a nice slow fermentation in the tank just to try and get some gentle bubbles. And I've been trying to get as much sort of lees contact and a bit of time in oak just to give it something a little bit different. So we want it to be an interesting sort of Charmat style wine is what we're going for. But for me, in England, if you're making sparkling wine, there are always going to be sort of press fractions and varieties that aren't necessarily suited to making a high quality champagne style wine. So we tend to use some of our later press fractions.
When you say prep, you mean you get the free run juice, you get something else out, and then you crank up the pressure and you get more stuff, yeah. But it can sometimes have a little bit more astringency.
Yeah, when you say crank up the pressure, you don't really crank up the pressure. No. I mean, you take the free run juice, which is about 50% yield. So out of a ton of grapes, you get 500 litres. And that will be the free run. So that will be mainly sort of the pulp, stuff that comes from the pulp. So sugars, acids and water. That's your pure stuff. That would typically go into a very high class bottle fermented sparkling wine. And that's what we do with our bottle fermented sparkling wines. Then you would, and then you used to say you keep pressing and the pressure increases and you get up to somewhere anywhere between sort of the 50 and the 65% yield. That would then be separated and fermented separately as your press wine. Some people would ferment them together, but we like to ferment them separately because you get the ability to manage that quality control. With the press wines, they are slightly lower in acidity, and I think they're probably more suited to a non sort of champagne sparkling wine, which is why we would rather separate the very best of our juice and wine and have that going into our sort of bottle fermented sort of champagne style sparkling, and then we use the press fractions for other things. So this year that's going to be a Charmat wine. You're the first person to know about that. So
oh, good.
So we're going to be releasing that in May, but it's good to have a bit of publicity about it. And I think it's going to be the sort of the first of its kind in England. But it's a little bit different.
Okay, so you said that it's going to be a rosé. It's going to have Solaris, which is a white grape variety.
Yeah.
And then you're going to add a Cabernet. What was it, a Cabernet?
So the rosé we made a rosé from Rondo, which is another unusual variety.
Yeah. That's known for its vigorous growth, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's a hybrid variety, very disease resistant, very high yields, high sugar. Must weights. It can be very fruity. It's quite red in characteristics. It's got a lot of red.
It's got red skin. Not red skin, it's got red flesh.
It does have a slightly red flesh, yes. Yeah. And so we made a rosé to be blended with the Solaris from Rondo and Cabernet Cortis. Cabernet Cortis is another interesting variety.
Isn't it illegal?
No, not in sparkling wine. No.
Not in sparkling wine. Yeah,
it's not illegal, but. If you were going to make a classic still rosé, you would make that purely just from the maceration process. So you would, in the press, you would just use a red wine and then you would extract the colour as you need from the red wine. But for most pink sparkling wines are made using blended red and white wine.
Yep.
But with the Prosecco style wine and the Charmat style wine, there aren't really no rules. You can sort of do what you like, and that's the beauty of doing something like that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we made a nice rosé from Rondo and Cabernet Cortis. Cabernet Cortis is an interesting variety, not that widely planted in England. And again, it's one of these sort of slight hybrid style varieties. It's a cross of Cabernet Sauvignon and Solaris. So it's got the early ripening disease resistancy of Solaris, but it's got some really interesting characteristics from coming from Cabernet Sauvignon. So you can sometimes get those sort of Sauvignon-esque almost sort of methoxypyrazine characteristics coming through, but it also produces a really lovely fruity wine, almost like pink grapefruit. And some people are starting to use it as a red wine base. For me, I don't think it gets ripe enough to make a red wine, because I think if you're going for that sort of Sauvignon style with the sort of bell pepper in there, I think it needs to be pretty ripe to do it. And I think it's more sorted towards a rosé, and so we've made a rosé from that, which is quite fruity in characteristics. So the idea behind the Charmat blend, if you like, is to have sort of fruity characteristics coming from the Cabernet Cortis and the Rondo, and then maybe more of a sort of serious kind of complexity coming from the lees aged and the barrel aged Solaris. Okay. I'm hoping that will produce an interesting wine.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other wine, grape variety you've got, I think it's in barrel as well, is a Pinot Noir, but not really a Pinot Noir.
That's right, yeah. Pinot Noir Precoce, as it's called in France, or Frühburgunder, as it's called in Germany. So,
we had a bit of a debate about Spat and Frühburgunder.
Spat and Frühburgunder, yeah.
Spätburgunder means, Spat means late.
We think that, yeah, don't we? Yeah.
And Burgunder.
Check our German on this, yeah, it's similar to Spätlese. And Frühburgunder means early. So, two different types of Pinot Noir. And again, there's a little bit of contention into exactly what Pinot Noir Precoce is. But certainly when it was first planted in England, it was thought to be a clone of Pinot Noir. And then some DNA trials were done on it, I think most people now tend to think that Pinot Noir Precoce is actually a separate variety. It's a mutation of Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir is one of the most readily, it mutates very rapidly and it changes. You've got Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, and then all the different clones of Pinot Noir. And Pinot Noir Precoce is more likely a mutation that's actually become its own distinct variety.
So it must have been a very old mutation.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But certainly in Germany, they classify it as a different variety. It's Frühburgunder, which is grown in the cooler areas of Germany, and then Spätburgunder.
The thing is, though, that whilst we think of Pinot Gris and Pinot Blanc as different grape varieties, Pinot Noir, genetically, you can't actually tell the difference between them.
No.
Most genetic testing will just say that Pinot Blanc is a Pinot Noir because they're just mutations. You know,
yeah.
You only need one gene to be tweaked a little bit and all of a sudden you've got a different colour.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really understand or pretend to know about the sort of the DNA testing, but I think if you read most scientific-based documents about Pinot Noir Precoce nowadays, it is thought to be a separate variety, but it certainly behaves like a different variety in the winery. It tends towards a sort of more fruit-driven style. I mean, in parts of Germany, it's actually kind of revered for being a very aromatic, low-yielding, really interesting grape variety. So it's not like a sort of second-class sort of counterpart to Pinot Noir. And I think it produces more of a Gamay-style wine. So we managed to get some nice ripe Frühburgunder Pinot Noir Precoce from Essex this year. We did a partial barrel fermentation, partially in stainless steel. Some of it was whole bunch fermented, some of it was crushed de-stemmed. So we were doing a little bit of experimentation down the sort of the Beaujolais-like side of sort of whole bunch fermentations, which is what they do in Beaujolais.
Like carbonic maceration?
Semi-carbonic process. Yeah.
Okay.
So, with the whole bunch press, whole bunch fermentation, you get that semi-carbonic maceration, which is potentially some of the grapes are fermenting a little bit, some of the juice is fermenting a little bit inside the grape itself. But not,
so you
not,
get that sort of Beaujolais,
banana-y,
fruity.
Yeah, bubblegummy, kind of very fruity sort of style to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, most traditional Beaujolais, I mean, you've obviously got Beaujolais Nouveau, which is... tends to be where you'd find most of the full carbonic maceration, although even now that's not used that much. But most Beaujolais wine, even the Beaujolais Cru wines, tend to be done using sort of a whole bunch, which is referred to as semi-carbonic maceration. So, yeah, the red wine we made in a sort of Gamay style. As I said, partial oak aging, 100% malolactic fermentation in oak. And we've got a really nice light red Gamay style sort of Pinot Noir style wine, and it's in Moulin-en-Avant barrels at the moment, and And I personally think that, you know, English red wine, it's got a lot to prove.
It's got an awful lot to prove.
Yeah, but I think it does have some potential. But for me, the way I like to think about it is it, I don't see it as being a rival to a full-bodied Syrah or a Cabernet Sauvignon.
No.
And I don't see the point in trying to get it to be like that. You've just got to treat it for what it is, which is why if you see our Pinot Noir, it's very light in colour. And it just is what it is. It had some aging in Beaujolais barrels, and I've made it in a very Beaujolais style. So that's where I personally like the styles of English wines to go, just for what they are, just quite light. But the nice thing about Fruburgunder is that it's really low in acidity, so the acids drop off incredibly quickly. In fact, it probably ripens a bit too quickly for most regions in Germany now. So even in England, we're getting really high potential alcohol levels in there. But the acidity drops off as well. So coupled with malolactic fermentation, you end up with acidity levels that are probably lower than, you know, a Gamay from Beaujolais. You know, it's very soft to drink. It's not acidic at all.
So yeah, okay.
It's quite balanced.
All right.
Yeah.
I think they're the three varieties.
Yeah, okay.
Just before we go, let's just talk about the varieties you've planted in your vineyard.
Yeah, sure.
I think you've got three, haven't you?
Well, we've got three main varieties. We've got Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
We've got a different selection of different clones from Pinot Noir. Actually, we've got a little bit of Pinot Noir Precoce as well. So that's the fourth variety, if you like. And then we've got Pinot Blanc and we've got Bacchus.
Yeah.
So Pinot Noir Precoce and Pinot Noir would be used for a red wine, because we've selected some of the clones of Pinot Noir to try and really crop really low and aim for a red wine or a rosé wine in good years when we can get the grapes ripe. But then obviously Pinot Noir can lend itself to being a lovely sparkling base wine.
Yep.
Pinot Blanc is similar in the fact that Pinot Blanc is quite close to Chardonnay in its characteristics, so it can make a lovely sparkling base wine. But it just ripens a little bit earlier than Chardonnay.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit more suited to England and this part of England. So with the Pinot Blanc, we hope to make a sparkling from it, but in good years, a sort of Alsace-style still wine. Mm-hmm. And then with the Bacchus, obviously we're going to be making a still wine from that,
yeah.
Which is common to England. So yeah, they're the varieties that we're focusing on.
No red though.
Well, maybe from the Fruburgunder,
the
Precoce.
Yeah.
Maybe from the in good years, I think Fruburgunder can sort of quite consistently make a good red wine. So you just have to crop it very low. Yeah, pick it at the right time and you're okay.
So one of the things we spoke about 2 years ago, not that you'll remember this, but I do because I just listened to the show on the way up here. I cheated a little bit, was that the you were hoping, we talked about vigour and particularly Bacchus and Rondeau, but Bacchus in particular is quite a vigorous grape variety. It likes to get big, and in the process of getting big, it doesn't really focus on the fruit.
Yeah.
And therefore, you need to manage the vigour to try and get the best fruit out of the vine. And one of the things you were hoping for was that the sandy soils that you've got on the site would mean that the vine is a little bit less vigorous.
Yeah.
And therefore, you don't have to do so much effort in the vineyard to try and manage it.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Did you end up with, you know, you've got 2 years...
Yeah, 2 years experience. It's hard to tell. I mean, we do have very sandy soils down the bottom there, very light, and we're hoping that lends itself to what you just said. The sort of difficult thing is, in the first couple of years of planting, establishing vines, is that what you're actually trying to do is you're trying to encourage vigour almost, because what you're trying to do is get a healthy trunk. So you're sort of doing the opposite of what you'd normally do, because you want a nice, thick shoot to perform the basis of your future trunk. So at the moment, the Bacchus is actually looking quite vigorous. And I think the Bacchus is looking vigorous because this is an old arable field. So even though it's sandy comparative to England, you know, compared to some of the soils that they've got in France, which have been vineyards for centuries, which are really probably quite low in nutrients and the sort of humus and the sort of soil that we have here. This is very good soil. We also subsoiled it and we did put some manure on and we corrected the nutrients to a certain level just to give the vines a good start. So I think at the moment the vines, the roots have gone down into that quite loose soil. It's perfect levels of nutrients and they're just thinking, well, hey, they're having a fantastic time and they're just growing and they're growing really well and they're growing strongly. So at the moment, actually, what we have with the Bacchus is we've got a situation where they're actually sort of reasonably vigorous. But I think as the roots get deeper And as we manage the vigor over the next 2 years, that will start to change. And now the job for me, because we're pruning in our third winter. Oh, sorry, we're pruning in our second winter. The job would be to actually start managing that vigor. So I'm already starting to think about the number of buds I'm leaving on when I'm pruning now, because I don't want that Bacchus to get too vigorous. Because once you've got a vigorous plant, that's when you can get into trouble.
What, you're trying to let it develop one way and then you're trying to change the way it's developing? Or?
Well, I mean, you've seen how the vines are planted. We've got a metre spacing between each of our plants.
Yep.
So with a vigorous plant, the shoots grow quicker. Mm-hmm. And so the length in between the buds is longer. It's called the internode length.
Yep.
So when you lay down a cane, you've got a metre to lay that down. If you've got 10 centimetres in between each of your buds, you're going to get 10 buds. If you've got 20 centimetres in between your buds, you're going to get 5 buds. If you've got less buds on the vine is going to have less to do. It's going to therefore be more vigorous because it's going to put more energy into the fewer buds that it's got to do. So you never really want to get into a situation where you've got two vigorous shoots and therefore not enough buds can be laid down because...
And then you're going to continue with that vigor, so you need to manage it
back. Once you're in that situation, it's hard to sort of get out of that situation. It takes at least a couple of years of sort of remedial pruning to get back to that situation. So right now we're in a great situation. I'm actually really pleased. The strength of the vines is good. They're not overly vigorous, but they're vigorous enough to give me a nice healthy trunk. And I'm leaving about 4 buds on some of the sort of medium vigor vines. And I'm not going to tie those canes down. And then I'm going to have fruiting canes the next year. And then on the Bacchus, which is showing a bit more vigor, I'm probably going to leave about 7 buds and I'm actually going to tie the canes down and we're going to take fruit a year early. Normally you would take fruit in the third year, but with Bacchus we're going to aim to take a little bit of fruit in the second year, again, just to sort of manage that vigour, because Bacchus can handle that, I think.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay then, Ben, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Great stuff.
Cheers very much, mate.
Thanks, Chris. Nice one. Nice to see you again.
Cheers. Done.
Great.